You're listening to Mostly Technical, which is brought to you by Lair Jobs, the official Laravel job board, and screencasting.com, where you can learn how to create high-quality screencasts faster than ever. Now, Ian and Aaron.
Hello!
Hello, Ian. We have an interloper on the call today. Do you want to go ahead and introduce this person that people probably don't know?
They probably never heard of this guy. We're going to give him a little attention. Adam Waffen, Tailwind CSS, our first time re-guest.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
First time having there somebody on twice here. So that's very exciting. We have like kind of, I feel like two main topics. I don't know if you guys can correct me, but I feel like I want to talk about Adam's hiring. He's out mm-hmm. there looking to hire a couple people, and me and him can commiserate on some things about that, I think, at the very least. And then we want to talk about, I think, some kind of, he wanted to pick your brain a bit on getting some content ideas and video and a little free consulting.
What the heck?
Quid pro quo, I'll be a guest if you give me some video tips. So we'll do a little of that.
I don't want any video tips. I thought we were going to talk about Varen's video business.
No, we could do that too.
Let's do that. That's a great idea, some tips. I can't be giving it away for free. I got no money, Ian.
I want to talk about this because I do want to have this Tailwind video tip idea because I still feel like there's so much untapped potential there. I feel like you guys have done some video stuff, but I don't know. I feel like there's more to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But
a lot of conversation opportunity here.
Right. For sure. We're already at like a 2-hour podcast right there. So, all right. Why don't we jump right in with just hiring? So maybe give us the quick overview of what you're hiring.
Yeah,
and
I didn't know
hiring.
We were going to talk about this, but I will.
Come on, we got to
dive into it. Yeah. So we're looking to hire two people right now. It's something I've been trying. It's something I've been like that's been on my plate for a year, probably. Yeah. Just trying
you
to figure
to me
out.
Like forever ago, you were like,
"Who
I'm gonna
are
hire
the
some
people? You know, do I want this role or this role, or do they need to have management skills? Do they not need to have management skills? Like a lot to get enough confidence to finally like post something that you feel like really describes what you want. I don't think people who have never run a company before have any appreciation for like the amount of stress and decision-making difficulty that goes into just like deciding to hire someone to do something and knowing if it's even the right thing to have someone do.
There's a lot of commitment there of like, it's a lot of commitment on the business side. It's like if you lock in the wrong person for the wrong job, that's like a whole endeavor to undo that decision later.
Mm-hmm. And just even identifying like, I don't know, it's easy to make a mistake of like hiring people to do like the thing your company does. And then really that just means you get to do less of it now, you know? Right. So if I hire more programmers, that's more programming for me to delegate and less programming for me to do. You know, and that's like not that fun. So you have to be really careful to make sure that you're like identifying like these are things that like would really make my life better if I could like get them off my plate, you know? So we're hiring for two roles. We're hiring for like, you know, what I ended up calling like a staff software engineer role, which is someone to work on like Tailwind CSS itself and headless UI and all the stuff around that. So like our VS Code extension and the Prettier plugin. And basically their job would be like a full time like super senior open source maintainer. So a lot of like, you know, trying to make sure everything is working and it's fast and is easy to maintain and that people's issues are getting fixed and that pull requests are getting managed properly and fixing things in other libraries we depend on when they break or trying to like campaign to get new features added to other libraries that we need to be able to do the things that we need to do. So that's kind of like the first role that we're hiring for. And then we're also hiring a design engineer. So someone who is like very much a super strong UI engineer, but with design skills too. Not necessarily like pro, super epic, crazy designer design skills, but like if they were as good of a designer as me at minimum, that would be sufficient. Someone who can contribute in the design process. You know, like me and Steve have had so much success working together on like designing color palettes or fine tuning animations or whatever. And a lot of that is like works because I at least have like taste and care about it, but I can't like sit there in Figma and make something from scratch like Steve can and make it look great. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that person would be working on like basically building out any web stuff that we need. So we're like doing Tailwind 4. We're going to redesign that whole site and build it out with new interactive bits and animations and whatever. We just did like a headlessui.com redesign that's not shipped yet. They would have worked on that.
Oh, nice.
You know, building new components and templates and stuff for Tailwind UI. And then also, like, I'm hoping to find someone who's got a bit of a knack for noticing interesting things in the work they're doing and like breaking it down and sharing it online as like tidbits of educational content too. Just kind of the way that me and Steve have historically done marketing at the company, you know? So if you build some cool thing for something that we're working on and you make a Twitter thread about it that people can benefit from, you know, that's great. Because we don't really do marketing. We just kind of try to find things to pull out of the actual work, you know? Right. So to have more people around that like are kind of have a knack for like noticing cool things to share would be helpful too. Yeah. So we posted those last week. Oh, they're open until April 3rd, I think. And yeah, hopefully we can find some good people.
I mean, I feel like those are, you landed on the right roles there of like things that you guys do, but like other people could take over those bits and help with those bits. And you're not going to totally lose the magic of what you guys do at the highest level. Also not, you won't be totally bored because they're doing everything you do and things like that.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm optimistic that it'll be the right team makeup. It's a little bit different from like, we had two people leave in the summer for different roles at other companies, and these roles don't really like one-to-one replace those. They're kind of like slightly modified versions of those, kind of just learning from like where I think things could have gone better. So yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So that was my question. Are these backfilling needs that you already have, or is this like you're growing?
A little bit. So like we don't really have like someone who's like just fully focused on building front end stuff right now. Like me and Jonathan do most of that right now, whereas we had someone doing that before. And we've always thought it would be good to have someone just really focused on that stuff who can go through like our documentation when there's like nothing on the calendar scheduled that's like a front end project and just be like, oh, this demo is kind of ugly. I'm going to make this one better or make this one better. Gotcha. And just polish all the time. And then, the other role, again, doesn't really replace like a role we had before, but we had someone on the team before who was doing like a bit of a mix of front end stuff and like working on tooling and back end stuff. So kind of like splitting that up a bit now. So there's just someone just focused on UI stuff and then someone focused on the back end stuff. The back end stuff, there's just so much work to do that we could just straight up use another person, you know, no matter what. Because we got Tailwind, Headless UI, we got like a 2.0 version of that coming out. We still have to like port all that over to Vue. Like, I consider that to be like in our space, that's like back end work. You know what I mean?
Because I think he means like the JavaScript.
Yeah. It's like our whole company back is like the back end of the front end. Yeah. You know, like that's like what we do. And then there's like the commercial side is sort of like the true front end stuff. Yeah. So
would these folks be working on Catalyst?
Yes. Both of them in a sense. So the staff engineer role would be doing a lot of work on Headless UI, which is all motivated by work on things like Catalyst. So that's kind of why we were doing Headless UI 2.0, because we were building Catalyst and realizing there's, oh, we need this, we need to change this, we need to change this. So then Rob would be in there fixing things in Headless UI. And yeah, so the design engineer would be doing a lot of work on the actual Catalyst components, new templates, new whatever. And then the software engineer person is going to be working on stuff like Headless UI, Tailwind CSS, stuff like that.
Since you're actively hiring, I'll kick this one over to Ian. Ian, do you want to complain about hiring?
Well, I thought since Adam brought this up on Twitter, we should at least
complain about hiring too. But I'll try to.
And I know this has been kind of banty on Twitter, so I'm sure a good chunk of our audience has seen us talking about it and Adam talking about it. But I mean, there is this. It's just amazing. I know. Aaron, you brought this up too, like just this extra effort. If you just do any extra effort when you're applying for a job, you just stand out so much more than you could possibly imagine. Like you just think, oh man, there's like hundreds of people applying to Tailwind, like I'm not gonna have any shot. Meanwhile, like if you put in like an hour of effort, you're already in probably the top 10 to 15 people Adam's
higher than that, top 1%.
Right, like 1%. So it's so incredible, like what an hour of effort could do for this. Really, I mean, this is an excellent job. It's very well paying. It's you're working on cool stuff with cool people in a small
huge equipment budget. You can buy some cool some cool stuff, man.
Yeah, like this is a dream job type scenario, and it's like 98% of the people are just mailing it in and yeah. So maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think your tweet said something like 90% of people don't even follow the instructions. Right. So we're not the bar is so low.
Still to this point. Now, that's a little skewed because of the fact that I think like we have a big audience. So we're going to get even more of those like low quality kind of just like spamming the form applications.
There's a lot of automated ish type things out there and things now. But,
shocking number of people in like the cover letter field write NA, and like they've decided that's not applicable to them. They don't need to do that to get the job. You know what I mean? Really shocking amount of people.
And just people, who are like, oh, I'll just fire my resume in there and that'll be enough. And it's like, oh, if you just do even like write a nice cover letter.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, here's the thing. You tell me if this is true for you too. But for me, hiring is terrifying. It's like such a high risk thing. You know, if you hire someone and it doesn't work out, unless you're like a sociopath, like you have now been put in like the worst situation imaginable because you have to like mess up someone's life, you know what I mean, and like put them in like a really rough
speaking from the other side, you really
have to throw a wrench in their gears, you know what I mean, and put them under into a really stressful position if you have to let someone go because like you made the wrong hire or something. So it's like really it's really high consequence, like scary decision to make. So your job as an applicant, at least when you're applying here, is to like make me like reduce that risk. You know what I mean? Like what can you do to just make it seem like a safe bet, you know? And most people just don't do anything to, to do that at all.
I do feel like people are so, I guess to me, what I've always taken from it kind of is that like people don't really understand the difference between hiring, between applying to like a bootstrap type company or even a small VC type company. And like just IBM and Microsoft and Google and whatever, right? And so like the things you have to do for those big mono, you know, megalith type corporations, like, like a zillion people are applying. You're going through like two keyword checks before a human even sees your thing. Fine. Like, so, okay, you have to do that stuff. And maybe nobody cares about your cover letter because like once you get past a certain automated check, you get an actual human to read it more, whatever, who knows? And maybe at least, I don't even know if this is true, but maybe you feel like, if I build a custom website to apply at Microsoft, nobody's going to see that. It's not worth the time.
Yeah, their machines can't parse that. Right. They can't
tell you what you did the extra effort or whatever. So you put put the extra effort into maybe optimizing your resume and you don't do the other stuff. But at like a small company, it's like totally the reverse. It's like, I'm only looking for the extra effort. Like I'm only looking for like you cared enough to look into what this company is, what I do, what we're actually asking you for, like all that stuff. And I'm not, my automated checks are like, you didn't do any extra effort, trash, not even looking at your resume, not even looking at anything else. Like you're not, it's like the reverse. Like I'm not going to get, because you have the right keywords, I'm not going to automatically look at your thing. I'm going to automatically not look at your thing because you didn't do the extra effort. Like I do feel like there's a lot of that where like people are just so used to like, well, I'm looking for a job. I'm just like out there sending resumes and they just lump you in with that. And that's like totally the wrong approach.
Yeah. It's interesting too. Cause like I can sort of empathize cause I can remember before I ever had to hire anyone. You just don't have any, like you don't have the right intuition for like what someone's looking for. And now I feel like I could get any job in the world because like, I know I can like,
I know what to say and do.
I know exactly what to say. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like you don't even have to have experience on the other side. Like you just have to be like a little bit clever and empathetic and think like
empathy is the key. I wonder what's going on over there.
Like how can I make it easier for this person to pick me? That's kind of the whole game, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, this is a thing that software developers are not traditionally very good at, right? And like one of the things I've always hired for in developers is like people who are more entrepreneurial. And like, this is like a big reason why is because like, like they tend to be more like they have the empathy of like the they understand the business aspect, even if they just have like sold one little thing or not that they've run a big company, right? They've sold one little thing or they're interested in selling stuff and they're thinking that way and they're thinking about marketing and sales. And even if it's on like a more basic level, like that's actually a huge advantage. So you should definitely be doing those kind of things. This is where like side projects are really good for people, because I think you grow from those things and it makes you more hireable, because it's just like, yeah, when you just come out from the pure dev perspective without any of the other stuff, it's just like, well, I'll just put my experience on this PDF and then they'll hire me because I'm good at the thing that they're doing. Yep. But really, if you really read like these job descriptions Adam has, for example, it's like, no, there's actually a lot more there than just like, can you code? Like there's a lot of people who can code, but can you understand what the customers actually want? And can you help us deliver those things? And can you do it in a way that's packaged that we want in the style we want to package things in and things like that? And so there's actually a lot there that's not code per se, or at least not purely code. So yeah.
You know what I know the most developer response ever to seeing to this conversation? The most developer response ever is, I shouldn't have to put in extra effort. Right. And if you're not compensating me for my time of putting in this extra effort, I'm not going to do it. It's like, yeah. All right.
The flip side of that is, you know,
that's like, great for me.
You know how much my time gets wasted, like reviewing yeah. applications, like yeah. disproportionate amount compared to anyone who applies. I promise you that.
Mm-hmm. But, I do think it's an interesting time too, yeah. because you have like the last couple of years where like, from the getting hired perspective was shooting fish in a barrel. It's like, yeah, I have like 10 job offers. Like everybody's competing over me and throwing money at me and like all that kind of stuff. And now it's, you know, I don't think it's quite as doom and gloom as people sometimes paint out to be, but I think it's shifted a little bit from the just like everybody who's ever done anything can get hired mm-hmm. for a ridiculous amount of money to like, yeah, there's a little more competition. You might have to like prove yourself a little more. You might have to sell yourself a little more.
Might have to follow the instructions.
Ugh, like, sure. At least the it most is,
yeah.
basic.
It's full on recession stuff. Now. Yeah. If you're having to follow instructions, that's bad news.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I do think some of that is in there too.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean,
you got some people though. It sounds like maybe you got a couple potentials.
A couple. That's, yeah. There's a few in there that have submitted thoughtful applications so far. So that's good. I expect they'll get better over time. I'm sure the beginning is when the worst ones will come in, because those are going to be the lowest effort. Mm-hmm. Towards the end, you know, I think the best ones will come in like right near the end when people are finally like, you know, I got to submit this. I can't polish it forever or whatever. And It sounds like there's no expectations on people to like build these like crazy ambitious things, but you want to just like, do your best effort to like sell yourself. You know what I mean? It just has to be a piece of writing. It doesn't have to be anything beyond that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But just like, I think the best people are probably going to want to write something, sleep on it, read it, sleep on it, read on it. You know what I mean? And just like I feel really good about this thing that I'm sending through.
Yep.
I've had people in the past do like really over the top things that I think is worth pointing out. Like that's not necessarily like the thing. Like if you build like some crazy, interactive game as a resume or something, you know, we've had people like submit stuff like that, and that doesn't necessarily like work, you know what I mean? Like just because like you like wrote a lot of code, it does, and it took you a lot of time, it's not the same as just like really trying to de-risk you as like an applicant and really thinking about like what is being looked for. You know, you can spend a lot less time than that, I guess is my point, as long as you just like, you know, speak to what's outlined in the application, why you'd be a good fit for that, what you've done in the past that's relevant, point to any evidence that you're going to succeed in the role, you know? That's really the key for sure.
So. And I feel like you guys are a fairly conservative company. And like, so you're not necessarily looking for somebody who's like a maniac and it's like, look at, I'm way out there and I'm like creating insane stuff to get this job. It's like, yeah, you're just looking for somebody who's like, reliable, who's gonna take the time,
solid, you know,
put in the effort, solid, yeah, like smart solid person, like,
you know,
you took the time and effort, you didn't go crazy, but like, yes, you didn't spend 50 hours building a game out of Tailwind, but you did spend 3 hours like over 3 or 4 days maybe like writing something, thinking about it, going back over it,
curating some things you've done in the past, here's like a pull request I opened to this project where I spent a lot of time convincing them that it was a good thing to add, you know, like that, those sorts of things are the sorts of things that are going to really help me feel like, oh yeah, like this person looks like they know what they're doing, you know?
Yep.
So,
cool.
We'll see.
All right. Yeah, I think you'll get there. Are you willing to not hire someone if you don't find the right person? Sometimes people get in definitely. That mood,
yeah,
you know, definitely. Of like, I'm hiring somebody and I'm just going to like, well, I'm not going to do this again, you know?
Yeah. I hope we find the right people. Like, I'd be really disappointed if we didn't, but we don't need to, you know, like there's probably going to be like ROI on these roles, but generally it's just like me taking a pay cut to hopefully like have a more fun work environment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, this is a whole other aspect of the bootstrap company, right? Like this is like Mike, the hiring manager at Microsoft is not like, this is my personal money and all that whole angle on things. Whereas like in our companies, it's like, oh, like, well, now I'm going to have $275,000 less. Like,
yeah,
hopefully they're going to make that back. But there's a chance they're not going to exactly make it back either, at least not in a clear way. It might not be directly one-to-one. Like, oh, I clearly see this hire made me $600,000. Like, it's not probably going to be quite like that. So,
no. So it's, it's different, man. It's people don't think about it that way, I don't think. This is like someone's money. It's not like magic company money, you know what I mean?
Right. Where you just have like, hey, I have a budget, and not only is it magic company money, but if I don't spend this money, I will lose it. They will be like, oh, you had $1 million to hire three people and you only spent 600,000. Like, next year you don't, then you get 600,000 next year, you don't get $1 million next year. So, or you have to fight for that million again or whatever. So it's very, very different there. You're actively trying to spend your budget most of the time to justify it, essentially. So very interesting. All right, break in here very quickly. We gotta do a quick ad for our friends over at Laracasts. Jeffrey Way, so gracious to sponsor us. Let me bring him up if I can do that. I have to make this part a little more streamlined. We got to work on this part for the video. But anyway, Laracast, you know, friends of the show. I know Adam, I'm sure, has been involved in Laracast at different points. But just invaluable resource to the Laravel community and web development community. So check out laracast.com. Everything about Laravel. They got the new Laravel 11 course going right now, which is really awesome. I've started poking in on that and learning things myself in there. So check that out. It's only $19 a month. They still have the lifetime deal. I think it's $3.99 for life. As we've talked about before, both Aaron and I are lifetime members. So definitely check that out. It's the easiest sort of buy in the whole community, I would say. It's just a no-brainer. It's a write-off. And
it's a write-off.
So check out Laracast. Thank you, Laracast, and the crew over there for sponsoring the show. Truly appreciate it.
And when you go sign up for Laracast, go watch my course first. So Jeffrey thinks, oh, wow, Aaron's course must be really good.
Aaron's got a course on there. So if you haven't seen that, definitely do that. And it was that, what's the topic again? Is it Eloquent?
No, Sidecar. Serverless functions. Yeah.
So check that out. And thanks to Laracast. All right. So where do we want to go next here, guys?
I want to talk about Aaron's business.
Tell me, Adam.
Let's do it.
I don't have anything on you. I just want to.
What's your hot take?
I think we need to figure out. We need to figure out a plan, a really great plan.
I love it.
You know,
I like this. I love a good plan.
All right. So after I told you, you were like, I want to come on the pod. So you're driving. you tell me, where are we going?
Okay. So we chatted about some things. You know, you made your big announcement. I think I just want to keep riffing on it because like we got cut off because we had to. Mm-hmm. You had to talk to one of your 60,000 potential employers.
And you had to go see Seinfeld. So it was like, that's true. To be fair, it went both, you know, both ways. Yeah.
Why? My wife let the dog in. I got to live with the dog. All right. That's fine. As long as the dog stays quiet. So we went to see Seinfeld. And,
dogs of the pod.
I got to sit 15 feet away from Jerry Seinfeld while he had dinner for like an hour and a half at a dead, empty restaurant in the corner of the casino. It was incredible.
One of the highlights of our friendship, you were like live messaging us. Seinfeld's across. Here he is. His appetizers arrived. He's here.
It was crazy, dude.
It was awesome. So
here's what happened. We got to the casino, Falls View Casino, Niagara Falls. Me and Steve got there to check in. Walk up to the counter to check in. And as we walk up to the counter, these three guys come into the elevator and like walk past us. And in the corner of my eye, I'm like, is that Jerry Seinfeld? But I just thought, what are the odds? You know, like, they look different than they do on TV in 1991. You know what I mean? Like, right. He looks a lot older. It's like, there's some recognizable features, whatever. You don't want to stare. He's wearing a ball cap. he's got like, you know, just like some New Balance sneakers on or whatever.
That's him.
And I'm just, and I don't know like what, how he dresses, but I just kind of, I saw these shoes and I just kind of thought, I kind of doubt it's him for some reason. Like these shoes, like for a billionaire dude, like I think he's worth almost $1 billion.
I think it
didn't look like billionaire shoes to me, you know? Right, so I thought that's probably not him. That's literally what I thought. We do our check-in. They tell us our rooms aren't going to be ready for a bit. So me and Steve are like, let's go grab a beer at this like bar right across from like the check-in desk. So we go in there. We go and walk to our table. Steve's like, let's go sit over by the front of these tables there. And I was like, ah, why don't we get a booth? Why don't we get a booth? And he's like, okay, I'll get a booth. I could tell he didn't really want to get a booth, but he played along. Now, in retrospect, he's really grateful we got this booth because this booth was two tables away from these gentlemen in this dark corner.
Are you listening? You should be grateful we got the booth.
Yeah.
And we sat down and I said to Steve, because I saw some people at this table, and these are the same people that had walked past me when we were checking in. I sit down and I'm like, Steve, is that fucking Jerry Seinfeld behind us? And Steve looks over there and he's like, it is. And then that was it. Me and Steve were excited to just sit, drink a couple beers, chat business for an hour and a half. We could talk about nothing for an hour and a half. We couldn't speak. Our brains didn't function. We were just totally starstruck, living in this insane moment where he's behind me. And all I hear this whole time, I'm trying to like drink a beer with Steve, is Jerry Seinfeld's voice talking over my shoulder, because they're not back there even being quiet. They're just like chit-chatting. He's talking about some shoot he was doing in LA last week, whatever. And it's just Jerry Seinfeld's voice, just, you know, like the most iconic voice in my entire life over my shoulder the whole time. Just couldn't even. Yeah, it was a pretty insane thing. Did not make eye contact.
That is incredible.
Speak to him. I'm sure he would have hated it. So
he would have hated it,
but
freaking hated it.
We did sneak a couple horrible blurry photos that will act as evidence.
Yep.
And
we saw them. We can make them out.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was quite, that's probably like the most famous person I'll ever be nearby for that period of time.
For that long.
Ever.
For I sure. Think.
For that long. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Yeah. I do. Yeah. Like before last year when we were in Miami, we walked into an elevator. Were you there for that? We walked into the elevator with Mr.
Beast.
That, right?
I saw Mr. Beast a couple of days later at the hotel. That. And then we saw Jamie Foxx too when we were there.
Yeah. I missed Jamie Foxx.
You missed Jamie Foxx. That was like the last, I think I was the last person to see him before he was hospitalized. You
know? Yeah. It was right before he was hospitalized. What did you do to him, Adam?
Yeah. Seriously.
I don't know. He looked good when I saw him.
He looked, yeah, I think he looked
Adam, good. Adam tried to tell him about utility CSS, and that was too much. Yeah,
that was too
blew
much.
His mind.
Anyways. Oh, anyways, Seinfeld was awesome.
Sounds awesome.
So, Aaron's business. Yeah, we were chatting, and we were chatting about, like, you had some course ideas and stuff like that. That's some of the things that I'm really curious to, like, push you on a little bit, and I'm curious to get Ian's take, because I could be totally wrong on this, and I'm curious to, and I wanted to do it on the podcast because like I want it to be out there so that people can tell me I'm wrong if I'm wrong, you know.
Okay.
But when we talked about it, you were talking about building this brand around like database education.
Mm-hmm.
On the surface sounds to me like a reasonable idea, but I really worried that teaching people like MySQL, teaching people Postgres, whatever, is like teaching people Excel, and that it's like people want to learn it. They want to Google it. They want to find the answers to their problems. But I don't know if like anyone's thrown out the take my money GIF, you know?
Okay.
Like, I don't think I could sell an Excel course, no matter, despite the fact that people need to use it every day and run into problems with it every single day. I think like the key for me in the past with selling courses, at least, has been like there has to be like sex appeal to it. You know what I mean? There has to be like something that people are,
which is inherent with databases. So we're good there.
Well, that's what I'm worried about.
Nothing sexier than a database.
So I'm just trying to, I just think it'd be good for us to chat about this and figure out what is the exciting version of teaching someone this stuff. Because it's useful stuff. It's important stuff. It's going to make their apps better. But like test-driven Laravel was like perfect for me because it was like, this thing everyone's searching for, everyone's desperate to unlock the secrets of how do I write my apps test first, you know, like that has that enigmatic piece to it, this thing people want to crack. But I also had the right balance of being this like fairly evergreen, like Googleable thing that people are looking for, because I know that is like an element of the appeal of doing like a Postgres course. Like people are going to want to learn Postgres forever, but they might not want to learn how to use this like flavor of the week Laravel package forever. You know what I mean?
Or JavaScript package forever. Sure. Like, yeah. I hesitate to even want to do the JavaScript ORMs because they change so much.
Sure.
So,
yeah. Yep. I think that's valid. So the sweet spot definitely is trying to find something that's both, because I think it's easy to find things that are one or the other. And typically the really sexy ones are going to be sort of short-term focused, I think. And the less sexy ones are going to be more long-term, but maybe just not, I don't know. Again, I'm thinking about the Excel situation. I think people want the information. I'm sure there's people out there making shitloads of money on Excel. Isn't there like that one?
Sure there is,
yeah, there, yeah. Right. What does she sell? What is like her
courses? I mean, on how to use Excel, and she's making, you know, she's the Seinfeld of the world though. So maybe a lot of, I think there's another guy called Camfrey who does Google Sheets, but yeah, she makes several million dollars a year on her Excel
content. So this is what I mean. Like, I could be totally wrong. I think Excel is awesome, to be clear.
I do too. But Excel is awesome.
There is a, I mean,
so here,
yeah, go ahead. You go ahead.
Well, yeah, let me do the counter and then we can. So here's my thought on it. So I do think, yeah, you're correct. I want to do like a database brand and have MySQL, Postgres, SQLite, all of those courses under kind of that brand, as a part of the stuff that Steve and I are doing together. So this isn't like a separate thing. This is part of the plan from the beginning. The sexy thing is interesting. I agree that this doesn't really have too much sex appeal. I think what it does have, though, is it is basically going to be the only one, right? So if you do something on anything TypeScript or anything like Remix or any React, anything like that, the market is very, very crowded for those things. And even, you know, when done super well, you know, Kent C. Dodds and Matt Pocock are both making millions of dollars on their courses, but they're like, you know, top of the top. I think what is exciting to me is the dearth of good middle educational content for databases. There's like DBA content, and then there's like, I don't want to know anything about a database at all. I just want to use your, you know, your API. And then there's that huge meaty middle of, I don't actually need to know how to host a database and keep it alive, but I would like to know how to make it work better. And I think that's what is missing. And that's why the course I did for the company who shall not be named did so well, because there was just like, this is the only accessible content.
Did it do well? Like, how much money did they make from it?
I wouldn't be able to say.
Well, even that is sort of,
I knew.
That's even a little bit irrelevant.
It was free.
It was
free. So that's what I mean.
That's the thing.
That's the problem. Excel content can be free and get a lot of traffic, but I don't know that people were, how well would it have done as a commercial thing? I think that's like my fear. There's definitely like a huge, there's definitely topics that like people will consume ravenously for free, but not pay for, you know, that's
for
like,
sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my concern.
Yeah. So one, I think the only piece of evidence I have that people might or would pay for it is before I joined Planet Scale, I was hyping the course.
Make
and,
sure
you know, like
that.
Writing articles and was like, hey, it's coming. I'm going to do this thing. Like, and I got maybe 800 to 1,000 people to sign up for like the early mailing list for this course that I told them would be paid. And so that's, you know, not money in the bank, but that's at least pretty good. If I can get 800 to 1,000 people on a list for a paid course before there's any content, that feels close.
So in my head, I'm trying to think like there are like more exciting ways to spin these things, right? So like, you know, Jonathan Rennink did his like Eloquent Performance Patterns course. Mm-hmm. That's basically teaching people database features, you know? But that's like, I'm excited to learn Eloquent Performance Patterns, you know? Yeah. Like it's a different angle than just like learn the database. So is there a world where like what is the pitch? Is it learn all the functions that MySQL offers, or is it like make things faster? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. The framing has always in my mind been like databases for developers. That's always been the angle.
Why do developers need to know more about databases?
And yeah, so that the differentiation, the for developers is a differentiator from DBAs. And so that's like you're a developer, you don't want to be a DBA because that would suck, but you do need to know enough about the database. And truly, it's like, honestly, it is. Yeah, probably make your app faster. Because a lot of the things that I end up teaching or for developers is like how to drive the database and how to do these things and make it more efficient and that kind of stuff. So maybe the angle is better summarized as performance.
That's what my instinct is. You need to make sure you have, they can speak to why someone needs to know these things versus just like assuming that they know or that they're just looking for it for the sake of doing it. You know what I mean? And I think there is some level of assumption you can make, like even with like the test-driven Laravel stuff as an example, I don't necessarily have to pitch people on why to do it. Like there was an inherent, you know, demand for wanting to know how to do it. People had their own reasons, you know what I mean? So I don't think that's can't work. I think it's important to think about, you know? And I think like the other thing that we talked about this a little bit briefly, but I think it's important to think about as part of the strategy is like, is someone who bought like Postgres for developers going to be really excited for you to release MySQL for developers, then really excited for you to.
Yeah.
And that you don't need to have those all be the same customer, I don't think. But I think it would be nice if it was, you know? So like,
sure would be.
In comparison, someone who like bought your Postgres course could be excited about your Redis course, you know, mm-hmm. but probably wouldn't be excited about the MySQL course because those are kind of like the same thing.
Would be excited about the Laravel Eloquent course or the Rails Active Record course. So there could be courses where it's like, yeah, I want to buy, you know, two or three of these. Let's say I'm Laravel and MySQL or I'm Rails and Postgres, but I also want Redis or I just switched companies and I need to know what the deal with SQLite is because everybody's talking about it and I don't know about it. Like that kind of thing. But yeah, it wouldn't be like, oh, I can come here and buy every single course because, you know, fully 75% of them don't apply to a single person.
So if anything, it might just influence the strategy of like what you work on when, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it might make more sense to do like a MySQL course and a Redis course and a DynamoDB course before doing like another just relational database course.
Straight up. Or something, I mean, that makes pretty good sense to me.
What this kind of made me think about, which I think this is an excellent point, Adam, and good on you for bringing this up. Cause I do think there are some issues there. And I mean, also when you're at the highest level, so to speak, of like the different databases, there is a fair amount of competition. Like there are these course, you know, Udemy or whatever all these places are, where I'm sure there's MySQL courses in there, right?
Or whatever. Like,
right. So even Laracast, right? Like there is, they're not the depth maybe Aaron's going to do, but there's like stuff in there about like different things. You have AI now. People are like, hey, I'll just go ask ChatGPT how you do this thing. And like, so there's other forms of competition. One of the things that was making me think about, I do agree, like having some kind of hook is interesting and it's going to be hard with these different databases, and that the cross sells maybe not as strong. So one of the ideas that it gave me was, should the real product be the Eloquent course? Because the Eloquent applies to all the relational databases, right? That's the thing you make sexy. That's the thing you sell. The database platform courses are YouTube and free, and they are your marketing. And so you're just trying to build up your audience with those, and that's your marketing. And then inside every single one is the ad for the like Eloquent and Rails Active Record or whatever. Like now put these things to work with our course that explains to you how to actually use this in your actual code with the actual, you know, ORM that you actually use every day, and implement these ideas with the tool you actually use every day. And that's actually making you directly better as opposed to like the database stuff where I don't necessarily need all of it all the time and things like that. So I don't know about that exactly, but the idea of like, it's kind of like even Tailwind does, right? Like Tailwind has all this marketing material that is the docs. That is the big marketing. And that's out there for free and everybody uses it. And then the sexy thing is, yeah, now I know how to do this thing, but wow, there's Tailwind UI that I can just go buy. And like the thing I thought I was going to have to build myself with Tailwind, now I can just copy paste it into my app. And that's even better than me trying to become a designer or anything like that. So there's something there where you're going to have to be marketing. And so how can you, there might be some opportunity to have some elements of this be free and YouTube oriented potentially. And then
I have thoughts on that. Adam, do you have thoughts on that first?
My thoughts to that specific suggestion is I'm not sure there's going to be enough people who are searching YouTube for specific MySQL stuff that are also like part of the Laravel crowd. I think like
between Rails and Laravel, that's got to be a good chunk.
Maybe. I just don't know who like I guess like something I was going to say anyways that feels like part of that is like to me it feels important to decide like what's like the identity of like my customer, you know? Who are my people? Yep. You know?
Yeah.
And I worry that like developers is not specific enough.
Okay.
Like the broader you go, the bigger the market, but the harder to like really make them believe that you are the guy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, by that.
So I guess like that's something to think about for me. Like I don't think this is maybe your thing, but like when I was thinking about this before the call, I was trying to think, how would I sell database knowledge if I was going to do like a course today? And like the thing that pops into my head immediately is like fullstacknextjs.com. That is like the course that I would make because they have all these new like access to you. They've added all these features that where you can run React on the server and all this sort of stuff, you know? And it's just like Trojan horse selling them your joins CSS, and whatever and stuff like in this package of like, I'm a front end developer. I've been building things, talking to APIs, but I want to make things like work all the way. Like, how do I actually do that? Like, that is like an exciting course title to me.
That is also,
you know what I hate most about that is that's a great idea. I hate that so much.
Well, I think that's also, you have all these front end developers that just have less experience, right? Like these are people who haven't been exposed to all the database. It's a huge market of
people who have never touched databases at all. They don't know anything about databases. Most of the Laravel
crowd has done some database stuff on some level.
And this is something that wasn't obvious to me for a long time, but like it has become more and more clear to me over time that there's like a huge amount of people building front end stuff. I always used to think that like when someone was using like, you know, some like a lot of people using Mongo or a lot of people using like some easy like hosted database solution. I told myself this story that they were doing it because like they'd done everything I was doing and now they're like smarter and better than me and that's why they're using Mongo or whatever. But like the reality is most of these people never written a SQL query in their life. Correct. And they're just doing like what the easiest thing to find was that seemed like it would work, you know?
Right. It'll hold some data on the server. Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that these people aren't smart or good at what they do, but they've kind of ventured into this whole world from like the different side than we did.
The different side. Yep.
Like we started with PHP files where you're talking to the database and setting cookies and session stuff and rendering HTML all right there. And then a bunch of people sort of come in 10 years later and they get jobs as React developers or Vue developers or whatever, building up front ends, talking to APIs that other people have worked on and they have all sorts of expertise there, but they've never done the database stuff and frankly probably intimidated by the database stuff and think it's a lot harder than it actually is and whatever, right? So I think like that's a really interesting opportunity and I think you have enough of an audience to like get your foot in the door there. Like there's definitely the Aaron Francis brand has bled out of like the Laravel space, you know, in the last however long for sure. But yeah, I don't know. So that again, that was just like me just thinking, what would I do if I was trying to like sell a course on database stuff? And like, that was the idea instantly for me. And I'm sure there's other things that are kind of like that. But I think you have to figure out like, who are the people that need help with this or could get most excited about it? And how can I sell them something that helps them like achieve like the goal that they think they want to achieve? You know,
So what do you think about this, Adam? Because to me, that we haven't even talked about the consulting sort of end of the world here, right? But like, if we're we're in here poking holes a little bit. One hole I would say I would poke at a little bit is like the
I'm so jealous. You just opened a freaking cracked a cold Coke on here just to rub it in my face. Guy.
Ice cold.
Like, you didn't even.
You don't like Coke Zero.
I got Zevia here, like an idiot. I got cream soda Zevia, like some kind of.
I got water.
Loser.
Water in a Yeti.
Yeah, I got water too.
This is like an AG1 drink. You know what I mean? Like the Tim Ferriss placebo water.
Yeah, all right.
But I just love that sound that when he cracked it.
Oh man, it just felt so fresh.
It
definitely came through. It's so crispy.
Wow.
I love it.
Okay, I've lost my train of thought here now.
I'm so jealous. You're poking holes in the consulting side. Poke a hole.
Well, I mean, because here's the thing. Like, I feel like the thing definitively you and Steve can absolutely do and have done and have evidence of your value in is design a course for YouTube that can greatly increase like your reach and your sales and all those things, right?
Yes.
The courses, I mean, even the course you did, right? Even the free one, like it still had Planet Scale's involvement in the sense of like they are a big MySQL shop. They have their own brand that they're bringing something to, right? So I guess to me, it's like there is this idea of like, are the courses potentially a distraction from the better business, which is the Aaron Francis consulting, you know, the try hard consulting end of the thing where
taste as a service. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also even the things that might more naturally come off that, like the screencasting.com and other types of courses and services that tie in very tightly with the consulting end. Whereas the Learn Postgres end is kind of just like out there on its own.
Different type of content.
Yeah. It's just, it's not integrated with kind of the other side of the business so much. So I don't know. What do you think about that, Adam?
I don't know. I think it'd be interesting to talk through like what is the strategy for the consulting side? Like what do we believe is like the strongest version of the consulting side? I agree like the screencasting.com thing is a nice tie-in with that because like you guys are known for being able to produce like really great, well-produced, high-quality stuff, right? And there's definitely like a subset of people who just want to know how the hell did they do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And screencasting.com is like already exists, which is awesome, you know?
Which is very
turns out.
And that can funnel into that. But yeah,
Let's hear the closely vision. I wouldn't say just one thing on screencast.com. It is on the sexy end of the world. To me, it's a little more clear. Like I'm a person who wants to make videos for whatever reason. This is how I do it. I'm very motivated to learn that. The database stuff is a little more abstract, right? Like maybe I have a specific question or two, but I'm probably just going to go look those up. So then it's more about my like general knowledge. Like I want to improve myself generally. So I'm going to take this course, but it maybe doesn't have the bite of like, I'm trying to do this video. I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. Screencast.com is like directly equal to a solution on how to do that thing. So
I agree with that. A bit more of like I'm on a journey, like I've decided to climb Mount Everest here and like this is going to help me do it.
That makes sense to me. So the vision for the consulting side is so we're coming out of the gate with two different things that we offer. We have I don't know, maybe 15 calls set up with people who emailed us and we're like, we want to work with you today. It's like,
awesome.
Great.
That's a lot.
Yeah. It's awesome.
That's a lot of work right there.
What do they want?
That's a lot of work. That is what we're going to find out.
Yeah.
And that's why we're pushing. That's why we didn't put anything on the website that's like, we do this for this price because we have no idea what people really want.
I wouldn't put any price on the website ever for this.
What
kind
do
of
you
thing.
Hope people want?
Yeah.
Here's what I hope people want. And here's what I think people want. The first is the straight down the middle offering of you have a dev ed team, you have an in-house team that you're paying $1 million a year or more for all these salaries, and they're producing video and it's not working. Your video strategy is just not working and you're wasting a lot of time and money on it. So the offering is you bring in Steve and I, and we work with you from beginning of like content ideas to framing to packaging. Then we don't do the recording. That's the big thing. We don't do the recording. There's a chance we could do the editing. That's still an open question. But we are basically consultants to make sure that the video you produce is going to work primarily on YouTube and Twitter. And so that's like the first offering is we will sit alongside of you. We'll have calls with you. We'll help you strategize. We'll help you come up with packaging, that sort of thing. That's like better than you put your webinar on YouTube and you wonder why it doesn't work.
Do you have any idea how many people that have contacted you already seem like they might fit that description?
Several, at least more than half, I think, already have some sort of dev ed, dev marketing, dev rel sort of team. And so our pitch there is basically going to be, listen, you have the talent in-house. You just need someone to guide you. Because the last thing I want is for me to be on the hook to be the face of every company. I think that's a bad idea. But I would, you know, Steve and I would love to say like, hey, this content could be 10 times better if you just changed it by like 3 degrees. So that's kind of the first thing. And then the contact us for pricing, the enterprise sale is you want Steve and I to produce the entire thing for you. And so that would be for somebody that's like, hey, we want you to make a discrete course on the thing that we're doing, and we will pay you a gobsmacking amount of money to do that. And that's the second, like, basically outsource the entire deal.
Gotcha. I'm surprised that you have such a strong signal for people who want like consulting on the dev ed side of stuff. And I have no data. You know what I mean? That catches me by surprise. I would have thought in my situation, the appeal is like, oh, we can pay these guys to like do stuff for us. And now I don't have to like take on the risk of building a team to do it. You know, I would have thought that would have been the majority. So I'm surprised to hear that the opposite
that
is true.
That exists, but I don't think it's the majority. I think the majority, and I could end up being wrong about this, but just based on the email and the domains and the people we've talked to, I think the majority is pretty large companies that want help making it work.
Yeah, that's good though. You know,
it's great.
That's great.
Because I think we're maybe finding that there's going to be some amount of people that want a kind of like a one-off video like we did for ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to find that there's a group of people that's like, hey, we're launching this new product and we want a hype video. And then that's it. Like, we don't want education. We don't want ongoing stuff. We don't want a course. We just want a well-produced like trailer, basically. Yeah.
Like what Sandwich, whatever, used to do, remember back in the day? Like,
exactly.
They did that stuff. I don't think they
charge an insane.
Yes. Well, this is what I was just going to say. I just really re-emphasize that you should not put any pricing on your website under any circumstances for any of
I'll bring it to the brain trust before I do not anything put any pricing silly like that.
Because like when some huge company is like, we have $3 million in developer relations people out there producing videos, right? Like, you should not be like, hey, the website says $9,999. That's what we charge to like make your $3 million team more effective. Like, that's like nobody's even coming to you with that budget in mind. Like, they're coming to you being like, okay, like if we spend 10% of our budget to make this other 90% more valuable, like that's great. So like you could definitely get 6-figure consulting gigs. And so I do think you got to be careful not to like short sell that. And I'm not saying you're gonna come out the gate that way, right? But like, I do think there's that kind of opportunity potentially out there that you got to be a little bit. And I think it's gonna be different for each customer too. Like, I think there's gonna be. Some people want X, some people want X plus Y. You know, it's not going to be as easy as like, here's the 7 things we do and that's it. Like, it's probably going to be uglier, but that's why you can pay.
Frankly, I'm so excited. I'm so excited that Steve loves that stuff. He loves the hands-on relation, consulting business. Yeah, business development. Like, he's like, I want to do all that. Like, great, because I super don't.
I do think, like, kind of to your point earlier, Ian, that does feel like a little bit, what's the right word? It's not really like in conflict with, but I feel like it's going to be like the database course business and like the help people like create awesome content businesses. Like, they feel like at odds with each other a little bit to me.
A little bit. Time-wise and things like that too. I mean, I think, I guess my takeaway from it, Aaron, I think we've talked about this a little bit, is more like, it's sort of like, can the courses kind of fund you until maybe the consulting side gets going? But then the counter argument is like,
you have 15
people on the hook.
You have
15 people on the hook. Like,
too much consulting money to worry about courses.
Yeah, potentially, right? Like, if there's so much demand for consulting,
you can buy yourself the space to work on the courses. You know what I mean? Like, maybe you can just do one big consulting contract a quarter that's like 100 yeah. grand or whatever, you know, right. and have all the rest of the time to work on your own products and stuff.
Yeah. And that might be, you know, we're going to take all these calls and we'll see, like, what is the demand? What is, like, what does the market want? And what is our, how much time does that require? And how much money does that give us? And we may do that calculus and be like, F the courses. I'm not doing that for a while. Like, yeah. we got to go pick up all this cash.
I mean, there's so a strike that, while that's the iron's on the table. Hot kind of element yes. to some of this. Yeah.
What are you more exactly. excited so about? That's like, on the table. Yourself? Like, do you get more excited about like putting together a curriculum for a database course and teaching it, or mm-hmm. more excited about like helping other people make really greatly like well-produced content? You know, if you had to pick one, which one like jazzes you up
oh,
more?
Oh, goodness. If I had to pick one, so I'm torn because if I had to pick one, I think like meeting with people and helping them do better and like just basically brainstorming and jamming sounds like a whole lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be very rewarding to see the numbers turn around. But then the other part of me is like, but I like the long term, like I like the long term bets of having in-house courses that we can just kind of layer on top of each other as time goes. And
but
that's
the in-house
like,
courses,
that's kind of like our backstop
on making content too, right? Like screencasting.com.
That's true.
Great yeah. domain you already got there, you know?
Great domain. yeah.
Like we kind of talked about when me and you chatted the other day, like mm-hmm. I asked you if you didn't own screencasting.com and it just existed as a website somewhere. And I told you that they had a team of 20 people. Would you just like be able to believe that and just be like, oh yeah, I could see how that would be the case, mm-hmm. you know? And I think yeah. we both agreed, yeah, that doesn't sound unreasonable for a company called screencasting.com to have a team of 20 people, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know what it takes to get there, but I can like imagine how that could exist, you know?
And you're saying that's more congruent with the other offerings.
I think so.
Like, yeah. That, I mean, that is our like, basically our down market offering of, you come to us and you don't want to pay many X yeah. thousands of dollars a month. Well, you can go learn it over here.
Do you follow Kevin Shen? I think his name is on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
I feel like that his business.
Studio lighting
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, like basically the setup, mm-hmm. your background of your video mm-hmm. setup in your office guy. I feel like he's got a great business going just doing that.
Seems like it.
And that seems like just a part of what yeah. You guys hope to offer, really, you know, because yeah. like you can't make a good on-camera video without solving that element, you know?
Yeah.
And they like fly mm-hmm. around and
yeah, they go yeah, out.
It's awesome.
I mean, yeah, that you can imagine that becoming a whole yeah different aspect of the business is things like that, yeah. like improving the execution of your team by improving those type of things. And
yeah, well, totally.
I guess
or
I'm just
hiring or whatever. There's a lot of different areas there.
I'm thinking like in my head, if you were going to double down on like database courses and stuff, it's clear to me what like the YouTube strategy is. It's teaching developers mm-hmm. stuff. You know what I mean? But yep. if you're going to go down this other avenue, I kind of feel like you'd still need to do some of that to like not get rusty, because that's like an audience that you're trying to connect with. You know what I mean? But just like you were already talking about with screencasting.com, I could totally see how you could create a lot of great content on like so many YouTubers already do this, but not for our audience. On this is the lights you should buy. This is the camera you should buy.
Yeah.
You know, like you were already talking about doing that before, right? Like you were
yes, entire yeah. stream of content there.
Yeah. yeah, and just to be like the people who do that for technical developer space, even if like you have nothing that unique to offer there, mm-hmm. you're still going to win. You know, like a business that I've right. like thought about starting in the past, and there's actually like at least one that exists. Is just like. Strength training for developers, like that can be like yeah. a real mm-hmm. business, because like you just have this ability to connect with them, you know. It's like yeah, I know you're know a nerd and you like Excel and you yeah. like whatever right. and yeah. you know and yeah. yeah, you know, like it's in the idea of like thing that's not for developers, like for developers, like the MySQL thing is not really an example of what like, I mean by that, but
like,
it's yeah, more
MySQL
just like
for developers,
cooking for
like
developers, painting for yeah. developers, you know, like
yeah,
but like the studio lighting stuff, this content production stuff, if you can like keep that connection with that audience, mm-hmm. I think like, you know, it's hard to know for sure. Like there is a risk of like how many people out there, like, so for example, I've seen people try to build, people have built courses in the past try to make apps to like make it easier for other people to make courses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you realize that like there's like 75 people making courses, you know? So that's like not a business, unfortunately.
Yep. Yeah, there are more course platforms than there are courses at this point.
Yeah. But this feels like, I don't know, it feels like it could be bigger than that for the same reason that all these people have great businesses around helping people just set up their office, backdrop, whatever. Now, I'm sure Kevin's pitch is not like you're a content creator, although there's a lot of people who are content creators doing it. I'm sure a big part of his audience is like sales representatives who need to look good on Zoom calls and stuff like that.
I think you're right.
But there's something nice about like, okay, if you like the idea of helping people like create really well-produced content and stuff like that, you own screencasting.com already that already has like a course there. That just feels like investing in like something that already like exists. Whereas the courses, I know it's not like it doesn't exist, but it does feel like a bit of a like reset to me compared to like building on the other stuff.
I do think what do you think about this, Adam? I do feel like there is this inherent risk. I mean, I've definitely had it. I think even you've had it a little bit, Adam, and with like Catalyst, of like this idea of like a second product is super hard. And like, so coming out of the gate with two products that are not, they don't really coordinate well together totally, is also going to be extra challenging, I think, in some ways, because it's just hard to be split on your focuses.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean, right? Like it's, if you can just say, okay, we're going to help people create really high quality content and just like, let's use that constraint and make sure anything we do fits in there. It's kind of clarifying, you know, but it also has to be viable, obviously, you know what I mean? But if it does seem easier to test the viability of that than the viability of hit courses, you know what I mean?
Right, you have to kind of make the course to find out.
Yeah,
kind of do the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. You have to do the whole thing.
That's a lot to do.
And if it doesn't work, that sucks. I've never experienced it not working, but I know it can not work.
Can imagine.
Yeah. I've seen other people who have had it not work, you know?
There will be interesting trade-offs here, right? Because there is like, I think it's unlikely for you to make an Eloquent course or a MySQL course or something like that. And like, oh man, we sold $2,000 worth. Like, I think that's unlikely. I think you're going to sell some tens of thousands of dollars at the low end of that, right? Just because you have a reasonable size audience now, people want to buy these things from you. I think on some, there's some base market there for sure. So I don't think it's going to be like,
I think just,
we did it and we got nothing, right?
Selling like less than $100,000 of an Eloquent course would be what you would be an abject failure. Right. Yeah.
So
you might not buy yourself that like 18 months of free space to do the next thing.
Right. You might not get to the $500,000 or $750,000. Yeah. Right.
If we get to $500,000, then it's like, great. I don't have to be involved in the consulting as much. I can do another course and I can just keep this train rolling. So but keep going, Ian.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's where like, I mean, that's also a possibility there too, right? You do the one course, you see how it does and you're informed by that. Right. And then you can decide from there too. But also you're going to be informed. I mean, one nice thing is in the week or two, you're going to know like what so you have these 15, 20 calls, how many of them are serious? How many of them are very serious and you're talking money? How much is that money? And all those kind of things. And then that's going to obviously inform you a lot too. If there's like already people who are like six figures or high, you know, five figures, like, well, that changes things maybe versus like, everybody thought it was going to be $5,000, then that's informs things the other way, right? So, but part of that is how you define it too. There is the part of being a successful consultant is to make sure you ask for enough money, which is not always what people are inclined to do, especially from the developer background. It's like, well, this is only going to take me 20 hours and 20 hours times $200 is only this amount of money. But like, really what you have to ask for is way more than that. Cause like the value they're deriving is hopefully going to be way more than that. So, so I think in a month you'll have a lot more information too, which will be very useful on, you have seven people who are like, let's do it. Sign a dotted line is very different from you end up with one. And then, you're like, okay, we might have to do some other stuff here.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense to me. I think the thing, part of the hesitation I'm feeling for just like, I know you're not saying this, but just like giving up the database stuff is I really enjoy it. And right. I think part of our thought with how are we going to be successful is partially I'm going to continue to be out there. And I think that's a big sure. part of how we continue to get people to show up is I continue to do something. And so I don't think I ever want to disappear into I'm just a consultant, because I think part of our top of funnel is basically going to be good content that we produce.
This gets back to my very original top point, which was, is the best way for you to make more money that all these courses are free and people can just see, look at Aaron's YouTube channel. It keeps growing. Maybe. Now he's at 100,000. Now he's at 200,000. He understands developers. This is the guy who understands developers. I feel like once you put it behind the paywall, that's like a whole different thing. Like now you're not out there. Now it's like you're less out there. Now I assume mm-hmm. you're going to still do like some chunk is free and whatever.
I'll still be hysterical on Twitter, but yeah.
Right. You know. That type of stuff. But it might be that like those courses are better served as marketing and just growing your audience more and more and more at the maximum you can versus, you know, restricting that in any way, potentially.
I could see that making sense. Like maybe not even just like, doesn't mean you can never do like a paid developer course, but right. maybe in these early stages, if it feels like these calls with these people who have reached out about working with them to help with their content, if that feels like after all that, you know what, like, yes, there's like plenty of work here. We can find some clients, like this is going to be real. We're all going to be able to pay the bills. that part's going to work. Then I could see a world where it definitely makes sense to like focus on just making content that's free for quite a while. Until mm-hmm. while that helps feed the consulting side of things and build the audience around like the content quality stuff and all that stuff, and then you can do like a paid technical course like when there's the space to do it, because like the consulting engagements are high price, they bought you like a bunch of money and you know put a bunch of money in the bank, and you sort of like have even more signal from the people who follow you about like what they want to learn more about or what they're excited to pay mm-hmm. for or whatever. Cause I do think like, yeah, it definitely wouldn't hurt to have like, to be able to sell something to the people who follow you just for your technical expertise, you know? And the,
right.
Cause there's definitely a massive group of those people. But I do think like over time, you're becoming more and more known for like making like great produced content, you know? Mm-hmm. Like there's people who like were really pumped about the video you shared the other day because they just thought it was mm-hmm. looked great, not because they necessarily were that invested in the message. You know what I mean? And I'm sure right. like the same yeah. thing is true for when you do like database content. There's probably a mm-hmm. good chunk of people who are just like wanting to learn how to pull that off or whatever. But I don't know. I do think like it's hard to get the right balance, because I agree with you, the concern of like, how do you make sure there's like a reason to keep like building the audience around technical expertise too? Mm-hmm. You know, like what's the thing that keeps that going? Because even if you want to do this like, you know, high quality video content for developers brand, you know, teaching you how to do high quality video content mm-hmm. targeted at developers, for it to remain targeted at developers still need to like feel a connection to you, right?
Right. And some of the feedback I've consistently gotten that I've had to like internalize is that people really like me teaching. Like they like the way that I teach. They like to watch me teach things. And so I feel like that is that's an advantage that I don't want to just let go of, you know?
Yeah. Can you think of any, like, if you were focused on the consulting side of things or focused mm-hmm. on like the creating great quality content and helping people do that,
okay.
what developer stuff could just like fall out of that? You know, so it doesn't feel like a distraction. I think that's the key, is to find a way where it's like, you know, this is a bad example, but is there any reason that you had to write code to achieve like what you were doing to like help someone? Mm-hmm. It's like, I built this plugin for Final Cut Pro with React mm-hmm. and Tailwind, and here's how I did it.
Which you know Steve what I mean? Has done.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. You know,
except for Premiere, but yeah, yeah same yeah, idea. You know? Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that is, I don't know. I feel like that leads me down the road of like, how I integrated Notion with Trello. And it's like that, you know, because at that point, I feel like it's going to be a lot of, you know, project management consulting type stuff mm-hmm. And less like hardcore either Laravel or database stuff in general.
Where do you think the ideas for content would come from for the database stuff, even if you were focused on that? Like, where are you dog fooding like your knowledge on that in a real way?
Yeah. So the easy ones are MySQL, Postgres, and SQLite, because they're same flavors, different flavors of the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so I can take basically all of my knowledge up to this point and apply that to any of those topics. And the details will be filled in by all these books that I bought that I'll read through to get all the specifics of each flavor. So those are easy. For something like DynamoDB, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't personally do it. I would have, you know, maybe somebody else, maybe Alex DeBree. Hi, Alex, if you're listening. Have him come in and teach that course under, you know, under the database school brand, mm-hmm. but he's the instructor on that one.
I guess my point is like, so yeah. a common thing I've heard from many content creators in my life is like, once they shift into like full-time like content creation mode, eventually they sort of like lose touch with like all the things that yes. gave them all the content ideas in the first place. So like I talked yep. to like Chris Oliver in Amsterdam mm-hmm. at Rails World, and he was like, for him, it's like really important that he builds, like he's got like a SaaS app too, I think. And mm-hmm. to him, it's like crucial that he continues to work on that, because otherwise all his like good ideas for Go Rails like dry up, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And yeah, so I guess I'm just, it's an ideal world is you can find some sort of like way to, like I know with Jeffrey, like he's just like always like doing shit with Laracasts purely mm-hmm. to like have new things right. to talk about. Stay in the game. He's doing yeah. that, right? Not because the site needs yeah, to necessarily exactly. be better, you know? And I'm sure it's really fun. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, can you build like the screencasting.com forum from scratch, you know, to stay sharp, yes, you know, is, like stuff
yeah,
like that.
That's the plan,
like,
actually. Yeah.
mm-hmm. I do also think you're maybe discounting slightly how much the people, if you on the consulting end, will want the Aaron Francis experience. Like, you are the face. And I know you've kind of said a few times that like, well, then Steve can handle that side and I'll be making courses. But I can imagine, like, if it was me, and I was hiring you guys, I feel like I'm hiring Aaron Francis is who I'm hiring. And mm-hmm. so if I don't get enough Aaron Francis, I might feel, I might not be my favorite experience.
Yeah.
Even though Steve might be better than you at all this stuff, right? Like, it's, but that's yeah, like, that's the trade-off of like,
right.
you are the face, right?
Right?
At least right now. And so that's, which is sort of a whole other interesting side thing of like building up his notoriety and getting him more mm-hmm. exposure, I think is, would be very valuable to you guys. Mm-hmm. But so I think you might end up spending more time over there than you think, because I think people are going to want to see Aaron Francis and what does Aaron Francis think about what we're doing and so on and so forth.
And you know, if across several clients, if we're pulling in 6 figures a month, right. that's great.
They got your time.
Some calls. Yeah. yeah, I would love that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
So what I'm hearing is concern about the congruency of the two different offers. And it's not even necessarily the two different legs. It's not even necessarily that there are two different legs, just that the database content and the make good content are just so different. And so I'm hearing, instead of potentially doing database courses, double down on, yes, the consulting, but for the course side, double down on the screencasting stuff and kind of leave databases alone. Is that?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm just talking, you know? I'm just like trying.
Yeah, just keep talking. Same. I just want to make sure I'm reflecting back what you're saying.
That is kind of important. Like it's generally more about like how to utilize your knowledge. Like, is it best utilized as courses? Is it best utilized as free? Is it best utilized mm-hmm. in some other way? Like, it's almost like making sure you're optimizing that ability to me.
I can definitely see a world where the business makes sense as like Aaron makes like developer content, and that's like how you get lead gen for like the help other people make content business. Mm-hmm. And that is Steve's business. You know what I mean? For the most part. Mm-hmm. And that's how like you make sure that there's actually enough focus available to like do well in like in both areas, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it is, yeah, I don't know. We're just trying to come up with the master plan, you know?
Yeah, I love a master plan. I need a master plan.
I definitely think, to me, the baseline is like keep the Aaron Francis train rolling, right? Like YouTube subscribers increasing, all the reach increasing, because as that increases, like you just have a lot, like whatever, you can churn out a course and make some money. Like the bigger your audience, the easier that stuff is to like do. And so that's the foundational sort of element of what you can then build on top of, like consulting or courses or an app someday that, you know, you start with a big advantage because you're building an app into an audience and you have a now a large audience and so on and so forth. So I think that is definitely kind of, to me, the one of the core things that has to keep happening for you, which I'm sure is your plan.
That is my plan. So here was our, you know, here's our, like our 2 month plan.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Maybe we need to be thinking like phases here, like sequencing of sequencing of the master plan.
Yeah. Okay. So here's phase one. We're going to take all of these calls together, Steve and I both, and we're going to, you know, try to figure out who wants what and for how much money, and figure out what is the viability on the consulting side of what we think is a good offering. So that's already like, well, can't plan much beyond that. So that's on the consulting side, the plan. Steve's actually getting his wisdom teeth out today. So we're starting calls on Wednesday. So sorry, Steve. And then the other, like the easy start on the other side was I'm going to do an Eloquent course. Like that's just, it seems like that's just a no-brainer. I already have a huge amount of reach into the Laravel community. And that's like a nice combination of Laravel databases.
Do you have an idea what's like your spin on that? Like what's like the Eloquent thing people are going to learn that they have never learned before, you know?
Yeah, I think so. If Jonathan's was, you know, Eloquent performance patterns, that's one that's like super old now. But I don't think that's going to be my spin. I think it's going to just basically be Eloquent mastery, because there's no, I don't think there's a single comprehensive course over Eloquent at this point.
My instinct is that's not as strong as like a specific focus personally.
Okay.
But I don't know what other angles exist.
There's a lot of juice out there right now for SQLite. I wonder if it would be like Eloquent for SQLite, like, it's super focused on that, even though obviously like a lot, it's almost like a half a database course and a half Eloquent course. Like where you're kind of going into like the, obviously the weird parts about SQLite, and then how you use that in a Laravel app and things like that. Cause obviously there's various trade-offs there, but,
yeah, I feel like that just that scopes here. It down. Yeah. That scopes it down. So it
might
small,
be too,
though.
It might be too tight.
I think Taylor has said from Forge stats that like 90% of users are MySQL users.
Yeah, for sure.
Even something that's just like Eloquent secrets, you know, is sexier to me than that's Eloquent mastery.
That's cool.
Like, what are like? Did you know it could do this? Did you know it could do this? Did you know it could do this? You know,
that is kind of cool.
Yeah, but I don't know what other ones there are. But I do think like it's got to have a hook like that, not just like master it. You know.
Mm.
At least to get that big bang launch, in my opinion. Like, I think a course like Eloquent Mastery maybe could be effective as like a slow growth over time, evergreen, makes decent money for years type of thing. But even like test-driven Laravel still makes thousands of dollars, you know? And it's like on Laravel 5.4, you know? It's like, that's how old it is.
That's incredible.
So Laravel Seek or Eloquent Secrets is definitely a bit short term, I think, focused.
Yeah. I like, you know, the sexiness of that, but I also like the long term, like Eloquent mastery. Like Eloquent is so big at this point that you frankly do need someone to teach you the whole thing.
Well, what about instead of being totally focused on the traditional Big Bang launch, what if you use like, what Caleb does with Livewire is a little bit more of a model where it's like, I'm doing this course. Like he does it about Livewire, right? And he's got this screencast about Livewire and he did do a launch. But his thing is like, he's just ongoing building videos. So it's like, I think you can subscribe now. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't think
it's like one-time a subscription
anymore. Yeah. So it's like a subscription and it's like, I'm just going to keep making videos. I mean, you're going to be able to make videos about Eloquent forever, right? Like every year there's new stuff.
But do I want to make videos about Eloquent forever?
Yeah. But I mean, if you
I want to be done, like I want it to be a discrete work product, you know?
Yeah. That's
I'll,
true.
I'll say that, coming back to the eloquent mastery thing, and maybe it just needs a little bit of a tweak on it. My experience is that, and I'm not guaranteed to be right on this because I'm sure there's counterexamples, but I found like it's really easy to sell stuff that's marketed as advanced content, like much easier than like comprehensive or from scratch or whatever. Okay. You know,
feels right to me, I think.
That's what drew me to like Destroy All Software back in the day. It was like, this is like, you're going to learn like the hard stuff from a really smart person. That's the thing that's going to help me level up, not like the beginner stuff, you know? That does not to say like eloquent mastery can't be that, but I think it's, if I was going to market it, there'd be a lot of focus on like, you already know how to do user.all, but did you know that you can do user dot whatever the hell something weird else. Thing, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I like that. That makes sense to me.
Well, yeah, with these traditional course launches, I feel like there is a heavy focus on the impulse buy. And so like, how do you get people to like, I mean, I bought like every one of your guys' courses. I bought everybody's everything. I don't know if I've ever completed one of them, but I bought them all, partially out of support, partially because it's like a good hook and whatever. And I buy it and it sounds like stuff I don't know. And then so there is that, like that you have to cater to that impulsiveness where like something that's more just like, it's a longer term baseline knowledge isn't maybe as an impulse buy as like, ooh, there's like, I'm going to learn those couple things. I hit this problem and the advanced eloquent course probably has that because I hit this weird thing and whatever. And like, those are the things that stick in your mind, right? Not the like baseline knowledge stuff. So,
so even calling it advanced eloquent, do we like that better?
I like that better than eloquent mastery. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I definitely like that better. I also think it even might help focus you, like skip all that baseline crap. Like,
yeah, it would be awesome.
Build the advanced
stuff. Like, if it's in the docs, basically don't put it in, you know? Like,
yeah. That's a nice little self rule. Like,
or if some things
like,
maybe,
well, if it's fully covered in the docs, like, maybe it shouldn't be in the course.
Yeah.
I don't know. Nobody reads the docs anyway.
That's true.
So. Okay. That's interesting. But do, okay. So, provided I find the framing for it, does that seem like a good, you know, 2 month plan? We figure out what the Crispy Consulting offering is.
I think full stack Next.js makes time. More money than that personally still, but, I do think it's a good course idea.
Next.js.
I know. And this is bias on my part because like, I'm not as connected to the Laravel community as I used to be. So I don't know, like, I'm not as in tune with the demand there. You know what I mean? And that doesn't mean it's not there. It just means like you can't trust my opinion on it.
Yeah, I think the fact that, I don't know, the fact that people are still watching Jonathan's course all these years later, I think there's still demand for
I think Laravel so too, but stuff. It was a great course name, you know? It was positioned
it was a great course name.
Really well. I think I named the course, actually. I'll take credit for that on the air. I worked with them on that. But it...
I should have bought it instead of Jeffrey. That should have been on Johnny on the spot there.
There you go.
Oh, did Jeffrey buy it?
Yeah, it's on Laracast now.
That's it, Laracast
it's
now.
It's on Laracast. Oh.
Yeah. So I...
Sponsor of the show. Go check out Laracast.
Check out Laracast.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like... It's got a spin on it, right? I don't know how many other spins there are for Eloquent other than advanced stuff. Or and it could be like eloquent recipes, you know what I mean? Here's like a problem and like how to do it where you can push more work to the database instead of doing it in PHP or whatever. Like that's a lot of that sort of thing is what Jonathan's course covers too. But that's really like where like the advanced usage I think comes from is a performance sort of
right. Like focus. I was gonna say, should it even be bundled with Redis? Should it be like eloquent with Redis or something like, because like a lot of this is like, how do you do caching effectively? I mean, we talked about that on the show before. Like, there's a lot, like when you really have an app
that's like that
doing
idea.
Serious volume, like you need to cache it. Like, you can't just throw everything in the
database. I like that better, and honestly. So, like, it's not about Eloquent. It's not about APIs and syntax and features of this one module in Laravel. It's like a holistic approach to getting data from your servers and people's faces, like as fast as possible and maintainable as possible and just like,
right,
clean, you know, Like maybe there's
like anywhere the performance end of it takes you, whether it's like presumably heavy caching wise, but maybe there's other services or whatever, other things that can be covered that tie in there too. Cloudflare, page caching.
Other things are kind of Elephant like, related. Kind of like this is like stuff I'm remembering from like the Rails content days back in the day. But you know, people always want to learn about like single table inheritance and like, like what's that thing that they do in like Basecamp that DHH wrote about, something about like polymorphic something. I don't know, like stuff like that where it's like,
or even denormalization, like when to denormalize and things like that.
So this
like,
is sounding like designing data intensive applications in Laravel.
That's what
it's sounding
something
like.
I kind of like that, something along those lines. Because that's the stuff you can't get from the docs, like back to that idea. It's the stuff that there isn't even really good information about. It's the kind of stuff when you ask ChatGPT about these things, you don't get good answers most of the time.
So you don't even know what to ask.
Or you don't even know what to ask. But even when you do, like it's a little not like always great, especially Laravel specific versions of how to implement
it. It's so easy to tell stories that people are going to read you talk about on the marketing page and be like, oh, this guy is literally talking about me. It's like, you know that app on your site that takes 7 seconds to load no matter what, you know, like everyone has that page, you know, what if we could get that to be like under 150 milliseconds, you know?
I mean, even that, I've been thinking about that a lot lately because that's, you know, kind of like, I think it's like Google's baseline standard of like 100, 150 millisecond load time. Like, could there even be like build the 150 millisecond app with, you know, build 100 millisecond apps in Laravel or like that, like,
and maybe
people
it's
know
like,
about that rule.
This is maybe too limiting, but you could even add the constraint of like, you know, no caching, you know, that's exciting. How do I do like the 150 millisecond app with no caching? Right. Like, I want to learn that, you know.
I don't know if you should do that, but
high performance Laravel, you know.
I mean, that's a pretty good name.
That's what I do.
That was my favorite MySQL book. High performance.
That's my favorite.
MySQL.
I know.
I'm
biased because High Performance MySQL is such a good book.
That's a good formula, honestly, to take like something good and niche it down. You know, like even like test driven Laravel. That's like I liked Thoughtbot's test driven Rails course. You know, that's where that name came from.
There you go. Where did that name come from?
And then the view one I did.
Everything's a remix.
It's like advanced view component patterns or something. It's just like everyone loves the word patterns. Patterns is like crack
that was a great
for
course,
developers.
Right.
So
everybody loves the pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's much, much broad. High performance Laravel is a great name. It's much broader. And so I'd have to rope in a few other components or things in there.
You could have something, you could have a module in there that's like,
you know,
here's like some reasons to use SQLite. Like, here's something that we do. Like, we in Tailwind UI, we use MySQL and SQLite. So, we use MySQL as like the real database for the users and accounts and licenses and all that shit. But we have SQLite databases that we commit to version control just because we have a lot of data to query that's very static and needs to be the same in every single environment. And it's just way faster to query it from SQLite with its own connection than it, like the original first, like Tailwind UI, like day one was like a bunch of like handwritten code to like crawl through like files on the file system. You know what I mean? Cause we had like a file system based data store, like each component was a file type of thing. And then we wrote a script that ingests it all into like a SQLite database and we query it all from there and it goes right into version control. So that's like, that could be like a couple lessons, you know, like, SQLite in Git, you know, like cool reasons to do that or benefits or whatever.
It does get to much
See,
more
Ian,
of like
this is how I build my website, Ian, and you make fun of me for it. This is what the Tailwind pros are doing.
Oh,
SQLite
I like
Git.
This use case better than your personal website. But
ridiculous.
But yeah, I think this gets at to like actual problems people have, right? Whereas like your problem in your real applications is very rarely like literally eloquent. Like just eloquent and not touching anything else, right? Like at the very least, it's always touching the database.
You don't want someone to have to like
usually
find,
it might
make,
be these other things.
Build their own bridge from like their problem to like your solution. You need to
like
cross the bridge.
Like, no, the solution
and like
is
sell
like,
them the tickets to cross the bridge. Then, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like the solution to this kind of problem is you need Redis and you need Eloquent and you need MySQL working in conjunction smartly to solve XYZ.
You can even teach people fucking Varnish. You know what I mean? or
varnish. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, but that's how. That's why I was getting at with Cloudflare. A more modern, straightforward take might be like maybe there's some Cloudflare components in there, or right, like elements or whatever. And like, you know, like I think even if you did have to, I mean, you know everybody, so like you can like, I mean, Adam just gave you a very interesting idea, right? Of like committing SQLite in terms of how he actually uses it in production. Like you could imagine, like, what does Forge do behind the scenes? What is what does Laracast do behind the scenes? Like whatever. Like maybe
you know what's great YouTube content? Interviewing people that run these types of apps
about their
and getting
problems.
Them to show code on the screen and like, you know, at Laracon, you should like work with producer Steve. Set up a room somewhere, come in a few days before the conference, record like 3 to 4 videos with different people who are coming to the conference and drip them out on the YouTube channel. Here's like a video I did with Taylor Auer where he shows you how, you know, this thing works or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Like that is worth the price of admission right there. That I got to do. I got to text Steve right now and tell him to buy a Laracon.
It's a great example of the type of content that you need to like know how to plug a light into the wall to create. You know what I mean? Right, it leverages your guys' like advantages a bit. You know?
Yeah, that's incredibly obvious. Okay, that's a great idea.
High performance Laravel. Okay. That is way better than any title or concept we've discussed.
Where do I send my money?
Yes, that's 100% a take my money type of topic.
Here's that's the name I've been most excited about internally here. That, like, I'm like, I want to buy this.
Leave this
dear listener. Please comment. Please comment or tweet
down
at
below.
Us. Yeah, please.
It's
tell
really
us. Sorry,
important
sorry,
with
Adam,
any
go.
Of these types of businesses to have really good ideas. You know, I think is my personal opinion. Like I was kind of talking about before, but like how I've never launched something that really failed in terms of like courses and books and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You could do every single thing that I did and fail if the idea just doesn't have the hook that it needs to have for it to like work, you know? So that's a good idea though, I think. High performance Laravel. And I love that it plays on like your favorite database book of all time. You know, that's just the homage strong, you know, so that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like that the idea is people want to separate the marketing from the content or the idea, but the reality is you can't, they are inseparable.
The
and
same
so
thing,
like
yeah.
you have to, the idea has to inherently have some element of a hook to it in order to be successful. Like they are the same thing.
Yeah.
The good hook with no foundational part sometimes works, but most of the time still doesn't. And then the good idea with no hook often doesn't work. So you have to marry them. So I think we've definitely, I like where we're going with this. I think I don't know.
It's embiggening my vision because I was thinking it was just strictly Eloquent, but I do think that angle's better.
And it's also a thing that becomes an asset that I feel like will be more cross-sellable. Like as you go out and build the YouTube following in these other areas, like it talks to the whole Laravel audience. So even if you are like, you do eventually build like a Postgres course, and let's just say it's free on YouTube. Like there's some percentage of that population that's Laravel developers will these days be a reasonable part of that. And you have a thing that you can still sell them that's directly for them and their needs. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of interesting too, versus like being maybe ultra niche down and things like that, or more niche down.
Yeah. And listen, if I ever do a free Postgres course that is free on YouTube, I'm getting some Postgres host to pay me to put their name on it. I'm not just doing it for free.
We didn't even talk about that. I mean, that was kind of my other thought with that, was that like, if as the audience grows and you do things, if you do YouTube oriented, I mean, how does every YouTuber make money? Like sponsorship. What is Casey Neistat charge NordVPN? It's not $10,000 a video, right?
No.
So that's a whole other revenue stream of like, if you keep the growth, if you're good at getting the growth there, that's probably what the best way to monetize it is through advertising and sponsorship and things. So a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, but if I'm doing a full course, I'm getting some company to pay me 6 figures up front for the full course. And then I'll put
it
on YouTube.
As long as you still own it. Yeah, as long as you still own it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Other things we need to touch here? I feel like we've covered a lot of ground here.
This is great.
This is good. There's nothing better than diving into somebody else's business. It's just a risk-free zone.
Awesome.
I'm just getting to like fire from the hip the whole time.
Yeah. And you don't have to do any of the work.
Yeah. I don't have to do any
my
work.
My job just got a lot harder.
If our ideas suck, it doesn't matter. Like, we're not on the hook for any of this. Like,
it's just me and my family that suffers, not you.
It's just Aaron who's going to have to go get a job again. Not me. Fine.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You can always fall back on full stack Next.js. You know, that one's always going to be
there. I know.
There.
I hate it that's so good. I'm not the person to do it.
That's the challenge. Yeah. But you could become the person to do it.
I could become the person.
You find the person and you co-market. Try hard co-markets and like does kind of a chunk of the marketing into things and you split it 70-30 or whatever and it's a little revenue stream and if it blows up, great. And if it doesn't, you did some marketing and it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Like there's some other things. But I mean, again, we're kind of getting back to like you can only do so many things at once. You're only two people.
I will say now that I don't have a 9-to-5, it feels like I can do anything.
You got
like
infinite time.
I can conquer. Imagine the
you had no
world.
9-to-5 and no kids. You would literally.
I can't imagine.
You would be literally en route to Mars right now in the rocket that you built yourself. You know?
Yeah. Like that guy in Limitless. What's his name? Bradley Cooper. I would be Limitless. I could change the physical world just by thinking about it with that much time.
This is hitting me so close to home right now. Cause like we have this, you know, I'm trying to like rework HelpSpot and all this stuff. And I've given all the employees, I'm like, this is going to be like a years long project. And they were like, oh, we can do it faster. I'm like, no, we can't because like I have three kids and the bigger they get, it gets worse. Like this, all of this month of April is like our oldest kid visiting colleges. He's got to choose by the end of the month. Mm-hmm. Like it's just totally dominating everything in our family. Our youngest is sick. Like the whole, you know, it's just like everything. It's like, you got no time. And it only gets worse as they get older.
Don't tell me that. Tell me it gets better.
It only
tell
gets worse better, as Ian. It gets older. There's more time. Now you're the coach of their team or you're taking them to practice 6 nights a week or whatever. Like that's just infinite stuff to do. So yeah, like the young, no kids is obviously ideal, but young kids is actually, I always thought it was bad. And I was like, man, these young kids is tough, but it's actually way worse. As it
it's
gets
bad.
Older.
I don't care what you say.
Way worse.
You know how hard it is for me to get my 2-year-old to go pee and brush her teeth before we take her to preschool
there's
in the morning?
That whole world. That part is hard too.
It grinds my soul down into dust every single day.
Man, we had my daughter when she was learning, getting potty trained. We were going on vacation for 2 weeks. We go on vacation. She decides she doesn't like how it feels to go poopy. She's not going poopy. And that was how our whole vacation was spent, was begging this 2 or 3-year-old, please, please go to the bathroom. My stomach hurts. Yes, we know your stomach hurts because you're refusing to go to the bathroom. That's why your stomach hurts.
Gosh.
Dude, the worst. Like, we're at that point now. Scenario. 2-year-old was potty trained, doing awesome. Now she decides she only wants to pee. Doesn't want to poop.
Right. Yeah, so, there you go. It's the exact thing.
Just runs around, squinching her butt with her hand on her butt. Yep. You know, just it's.
I've lived it, man. I know exactly what you're going through.
Squinching
the butt.
Crazy.
Oh, yep. That's great.
That's so funny. It might be an episode title there. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Squinching her butt can't be an episode title. That's bad.
I guess that's maybe a little.
King of the hooks over here, and you want to go with squinching her butt.
You don't think that's going to get people to listen? No, I think they're going to be like, oh, shit, we got to listen to that.
If we did squinching her butt with Adam Lavin, maybe.
That's what I'm saying. Squinching her butt with Adam Lavin. That's the hook.
Oh, that's terrible. We can't put that out there.
All right, man. Well, I think we've covered a lot here. Adam, thank you so much for coming on. This is a great idea. I think it was awesome. Awesome advice, as always. So everybody out there, follow us, mostlytechnical.com, mostlytechnicalpod on Twitter, email us at mostlytechnicalpodcast@gmail.com. If we ever stop having guests, we'll get to some of that. Next week, we have another guest, so it's not going to be soon, but we will get there eventually. Obviously, check out Tailwind UI if there's anybody out there that doesn't own that. Laracast.com, Try Hard Studios. Is it tryhardstudios.com? I got to
try hard.
It is.
Tryhardstudios.com.
Nice. So check that out. And thanks, everybody. We'll be back next week. Thanks, Adam.
All right. Thanks for having me.